My name is Roger Watson, and I'm an academic visitor at King Saud University. This is my second and final visit on that particular programme. I'm from the UK, and I'm the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, and I'm the editor of another journal, which is Nursing Open. That's my part-time job between 6:30 and 7:30 in the morning, and the rest of the time I'm Professor of Nursing at the University of Hull, which is in Yorkshire in the UK. If anybody's been to the UK, I'm sure plenty of you have. You might have been to Yorkshire, but you may not have been to Hull. If you're looking at the UK, it's on the east coast, halfway up. So I've been asked to talk for a while on detecting similarity in manuscripts. It won't be a very long presentation, but I'm very happy to take some questions afterwards. I usually find with this issue there are questions, and similarity detection in manuscripts is an ethical issue. It's different from the ethics that Juliana was talking about, their research ethics. However, plagiarism in manuscripts and plagiarism in research generally is within the domain of research ethics, but it's slightly different. It's not one that will necessarily directly lead to harm to patients, although indirectly plagiarism of results could, and I'll explain why. It's something that we are increasingly concerned about. We always have been concerned about it as editors, but we're increasingly concerned about it for two reasons. One, we think it's on the increase because of the pressure to publish. People are under pressure to publish, therefore they take shortcuts. It's also on the increase because we're getting much better at detecting it, and I'll explain how we do that. But the main thing is not how we do these things. The main thing is why we do it, and how can you avoid doing it yourselves. On the slide you see my main journal. It's 40 years old this year. That's a traditional volumized journal. It's you don't pay to publish in that, but you can pay to have your articles made open access. Down at the bottom right, Nursing Open is a different model. It's an open access, online only, no hard copy produced at all, pay to publish journal. But I'll just make one thing clear: you don't pay in order to get your paper published or to get your paper through the review system. You pay to get it published once it's been through the review system. This is not one of these predatory journals, of which there are something like 800 at the last count. And I'm mentioning those because they're journals that they don't care about similarity. They'll put your paper up whether it's 100% similar to other sources or not. So you've got to be very careful and avoid those if at all possible, because you will be the one that's responsible for the plagiarism or the copying or the similarity, and not the journal. So do take great care. And we're a member of COPE, that's the Committee on Publication Ethics. We've been a member since 2009, and the Committee on Publication Ethics, or COPE, it's well worth checking that on Google, because on Google you'll see on their website, you'll see various things. You'll see codes of practice for authors, editors, and for reviewers. And, of course, part of the code of practice for authors is not to copy other people's work and pass it off as your own, and not to duplicate your own work and pass it off as a separate manuscript. These are all parts of the ethical code within publishing. And the COPE website has algorithms on it which are there to help people like me, who catch people, not like you, but people who might be like you, copying other people's work, and what to do with them and how to pursue them right to the bitter end if they don't own up. And I will show you later what the possible consequences are of being caught plagiarising or even duplicating papers. And what I'm going to talk about today is really not the end product of that, which is being caught after publication. That's a hugely serious issue, but we're working to try and prevent it from happening in partnership with our authors. The only other thing of interest there is that my journal's got a Twitter site, and we've got over 14,500 followers, if you're interested in following us. So the ethical issues in publication, I'm just going to run through all of them and focus on similarity. Duplicate publication, that's a big issue, quite common. That means taking your work and publishing it somewhere else. And I'm going to preempt a question which I'm sure somebody might ask at the end, or I find that people might still ask it at the end because they might not have heard what I said. I often get asked the question when I'm giving talks like this or writing for publication workshops, can I send my manuscript to more than one journal at the same time? And there's only one answer to that, and the answer is no, but it happens quite a lot. And that's often what leads to duplicate publication. Authorship and order of authorship, I'm not going to talk about that at all today, but that falls within the whole ethical area as well. I noticed Juliana's, when she ran ahead on her slides, you were going to address some of those issues. Scientific misconduct, including plagiarism. Okay, so plagiarism really comes under scientific misconduct. It's not really a category of its own. It comes together with duplication in the publication industry because it's the same thing, it's similarity, that's the general word. But scientific misconduct can include plagiarism of other people's ideas at the proposal stage or other people's ideas after the publication stage. Anything where you copy someone else's ideas is plagiarism. But scientific misconduct, of course, includes fabrication, which is making up results, or falsification, which is making the best out of your results in a way that is misleading. And finally, again, I'm not going to talk about this, but conflicts of interest, whereby any involvement of someone in publishing a paper may give rise to suspicion that their involvement hasn't been scientifically neutral. They've been there for personal gain or otherwise. For example, if I left this university at the end of this week, and Ahmad Abushaker and I suddenly had 10 papers published in my journal, people might say, oh, well, you've been to that university, you've just been paid to publish them, haven't you? You know, that kind of thing. So anything, for example, that comes out of my time here, I have to declare at the end of the publication, and certainly to my publishers, that I've been a paid consultant or visiting academic at this university. We've got to make sure that people can understand people's involvement. And I find that if people are honest and open about that, then that's okay. However, that's the complete range of ethical issues in publication. But I'm going to look at the similarity in particular, duplicate publication and plagiarism, which I've highlighted there in red. Anyway, first of all, let's have a quick consideration of why ethical issues arise. I'm not going to ask you to answer the question, I think, and I'm using someone else's material here, so in case I'm accused of plagiarism, I've acknowledged Harvey Markovich of Cope. When I went to a presentation, I asked for his slides and he gave them to me. Journals exist at the highest level, at the altruistic level, to enhance the scientific database. That's what we're there for. We're there to add to the body of knowledge, we're there to help it to increase, and we're there to make it visible so that other people can either use it, criticise it, change it, replicate it, legitimately, or whatever. But journals also enhance seniority and income. I wouldn't be a full professor in the UK if it were not for my publications. And I know that it's very important here in Saudi Arabia, not only what you publish, but where you publish. And, of course, when you become more senior, the general idea is that you get more pay. I wouldn't be interested, for example, in being a professor as opposed to an assistant professor if I wasn't going to be paid more. So these things go together, and human nature is such that some people will take shortcuts. They also enhance in the medical field, not so much in the nursing field, not so much in my field, to some extent, they enhance pharmaceutical company profits. So there is a tendency for some research to be, well, there's a huge tendency, and it's quite legitimate for research to be funded by pharmaceutical companies, but that research has got to be legitimately carried out, and not the results haven't got to be swayed in any way by the pharmaceutical companies. And one thing, of course, that will sway a database is by publishing the same thing more than once. which is a similarity issue. If you publish a clinical trial more than once and someone does a systematic review and doesn't pick up that it's the same work, then it will look like there's two bits of evidence and not just one on that particular phenomenon. And this does happen. Pharmaceutical companies have ghostwriters to produce papers with no authors on them, and then they go around and pay eminent people like yourselves to give your name to them when you actually don't know anything about the paper. And this is something very close to home for me, because I used to work at the University of Sheffield, and a medical professor there, I think he was an orthopaedic surgeon, was caught doing this. So it was very close and very, very public. They also enhance publishers' profits. I mean, you'll notice on my first slide, Wiley. I don't work for Wiley. I'm independently contracted as an editor-in-chief to Wiley. However, I've got to acknowledge that they pay me a considerable amount of money to do the job I do for the journal. They support me in all sorts of ways. And they have to make money to do that. And editors and journals are always on the lookout for spectacular papers, something that's different from the ordinary. And often, if things look great, or you suspect that they look too good to be true, for whatever reason, they often are. And sometimes they're copied, plagiarised, or duplicated. So all of these things, you know, despite the fact that journals are there for a very high intent and a very high reason, are subject to human nature, which in my culture and in my religion tends to be sinful and do things wrong. I'm sure it's exactly the same here. Otherwise, people just wouldn't do things wrong. And I know, as an editor-in-chief, because I'm never in a situation ever, and I never have been since the day I became an editor-in-chief of a previous journal, there's never been a time at which I have not been dealing with an ethical issue, ever. Authorship, duplication, ethical plagiarism. You know, I've got things to deal with right now. There are things that I'm investigating. 2 days ago, on Friday, I went down to Jeddah for the weekend. I thought I'd check my emails quickly in King Khalid International Airport before I went, and a colleague from Ireland sent me two papers, one from my journal and one from another journal, and said, take a look at this. And I wasn't very sure what she meant, and it was very difficult to read them on my iPhone, but I did my best, and I said, are you trying to tell me these are the same? And she said, yes. So I've had to start another investigation going. So it's not something that's over there, miles away. It's right in front of me every day. Not in front of me here, I hope, but in front of me on my desk. Now, this is a study from Israel by Munir Irami et al., done in 2008. That's quite a long time ago. By that I mean this is probably in the very early days of commercial similarity detection software. Turnitin and Authenticate and things like that, which those of you who are teachers will have heard of. And the study being published in 2008 was probably done a few years before that. I know we've had these things available, but they weren't so common at this particular time. And this study was done, you can read the paper, I could send it to you if you're interested, and I'll give you my email at the end. It's quite a complex paper. They used all sorts of complicated algorithms to search the World Wide Web and a particular database, Medline, for duplication and plagiarism or similarity. And these days, you and I could do it in 5 minutes on our desktop with Turnitin. So they took a sample of Medline citations. It happened to be 62,500 papers. That was the sample. And what they found was that 0.04 had no shared author, but content that was highly similar. This suggested plagiarism. It's not proof of it. Similarity is not proof. You have to do more to prove it, but that's what they reckoned. And they found that 1.35% had shared authors and highly similar content, which they reckoned could be, in some cases, duplication. So they extrapolated to the whole Medline database at that time, and they reckoned that there were probably 3,500 plagiarised papers and 117,500 duplicated papers in the Medline database at that time. That's a long time ago. So obviously not every one of those is plagiarised, not everyone is duplicated, but if 10% of them are, that's enough. And ethically, this is wrong. People's ideas have been stolen, or your ideas have been misrepresented if you've duplicated. But if these are medical studies claiming the efficacy of a drug, then patient safety is at stake, because the database will be skewed by publication. It's called a publication bias in systematic reviews. So it does have human consequences, as well as offending the publication industry and the academic community generally. So duplicate publication, essentially you're not allowed to republish the same findings. You're not allowed to submit, I've said this already, a manuscript to two or more journals at once. And you're not allowed, another aspect of this is to divide a research project into too many small slices. This is called salami slicing. You won't have salami in this country. It's an Italian sausage made from pork. But you'll have sausages here that are thinly sliced, I'm sure. It means trying to cut a study up into small pieces and sell it off. That's not wrong as such, because if you've got a 10 million Saudi riyal project over 5 years, and you publish one 3,500 word paper, I think you've rather shortchanged your funders and the general public. It's quite legitimate to divide studies up into different areas. But it's an academic judgment call, really. There are no hard and fast instructions. On the other hand, if you did a 6-month project for 10,000 Saudi riyal and you published 10 papers out of it, something's wrong. So there are extremes. And again, similarity detection can pick this up. If you're in any doubt, okay, I'm talking here about avoiding this rather than how to do it. If you're in any doubt about duplication, if you think that you may be in danger of duplicating a paper, then seek editorial advice. Under circumstances such as when you've got a project with multiple aspects to it and you're publishing different papers, you may have a clinical trial aspect and a qualitative aspect that interviews people about why they didn't take part in the trial, and there may be a survey that preceded the clinical trial. It makes perfect common sense to publish these as separate papers, because they don't fit together very well. It's good advice to say in each of the papers, especially if at the beginning, this is part of a larger study, other papers will be published from it. And if you think there's any doubt, or anybody says, I think I've seen that before, or it's picked up at review, correspond with the editor and say, yeah, it's part of a bigger study, this is the publication plan. That's usually okay, and that's quite legitimate. What you can't do, and I had a huge case recently in the Journal of Advanced Nursing, what you can't do is do a clinical trial with multiple outcomes and publish each of the outcomes separately, because that's completely misrepresenting the purpose of the clinical trial. It's also duplicating the demographic data and the methods. Even if you rewrite the methods to get them different, you've got to give the same demographic data. That's often how it's picked up, because the tables are the same. The detection will pick that up, or a very keen reviewer will pick it up. And of course, statistically, you've made a type one error, because you're not treating the outcomes as independent. So I don't want to talk about research methods. You'll all be aware of those. But if you're doing a clinical trial, you have to identify your primary outcome, and secondary outcomes have to be presented along with them and corrected some way, Bonferroni corrected for multiple outcomes, so you lower the p-value. So, there's ways you can do that. Don't publish lots and lots of things from one clinical trial. Plagiarism is anything, really. Unreferenced use of somebody else's work, stealing their ideas, looking at grant applications for a grant application body, declining to review it, or rejecting it and then doing the work yourself, publishing things under a different language without permission. You can do that, but you've got to get permission. There's all sorts of things can constitute plagiarism. And of course, it's not just something that happens at the end. It could happen right at the beginning of the project if you're not careful. You've got to be aware at every stage about plagiarism. And people in charge of research projects have to be very aware of the possibility. Obviously, they haven't got to do it themselves. They've also got to be aware of their colleagues and to make sure that people understand that they can't plagiarise and use other people's ideas. And don't think that because something's on the World Wide Web or only available on Google but not printed in a hard copy journal that you're not plagiarising. You are. As soon as something's in the public domain, then you are plagiarising. The only exception to this, and well, we make an exception certainly on my journal, and most journals do, is they make an exception for published or unpublished but electronic PhD thesis and master's thesis. If they're available online, we're often lenient about not, you can't use the same wording, but you can use the results again to put them out in publications. That's just an informal understanding between publishers and universities. Because it would be wrong if you did a 3-year PhD thesis as you do in the UK and you had several possible papers out of it and you couldn't publish. Sorry, you won't see all of that. I can hardly see it here and it's in front of me. But that's just an overview. I'm going to highlight something in it. That is the publication process, essentially, from submission of a manuscript through, hopefully, to acceptance and being sent off to production at the end. There are several points, of course, at which you can be rejected. It's always easier to be rejected than to be accepted, I have to say. But what I wanted to do there was circle that, which is, if you can't read it from the back, it says, authenticate reject. In other words, the editorial assistant on my journal and all good journals, you know, Lancet, BMJ, all the sort of top journals that you might be wanting to submit to, and in the optometry field or whatever, if they're Elsevier, Wiley, Sage, Springer, you know, these big journals, they will all use similarity detection software. And the industry standard these days seems to be Authenticate, and I'll tell you something about that in a second. So what happens is our editorial assistant takes every manuscript that's submitted to the journal, puts it through Authenticate. If it's too similar, it can be rejected at that stage. That's to save us publishing something that's unethical and to save you as well from doing it, because we'll tell you, we'll give you a report, we'll say this is too similar for publication. And we sometimes give you the option, as I'll show you, of fixing it, but sometimes if it's too similar, it will just be rejected out of hand. So there's no excuse for us as publishers letting something in to the public domain that's too similar. So you can find out about Authenticate online. Google it and you can actually... well, I think I've got a web page here. I'm jumping about. There we go. If you Google it, you get to a web page that looks exactly like that. I took that screenshot a couple of days ago when I was preparing this. And you'll see there, you can view a demo, so you can actually see how it works. There's a YouTube there, and I think you actually get the opportunity to put a manuscript of your own through it just to check it. However, to use Authenticate is very expensive, and it costs us a lot of money as publishers to hire it and to have access to the database and to the software that runs it. It's run by a server in the USA, and you log into it. Every paper we have goes through it. So Authenticate they describe themselves as a plagiarism detection service, but they're really a similarity detection service. We've got to make the decision about plagiarism or duplication. That's a different decision. And it's for the corporate market, but it also runs Turnitin, which some of you I know from being down at the Ladies' College and speaking to colleagues there who are teaching. They do use Turnitin there for English papers. And also plagiarism.org, which is another website which you can use. They're all the same company. Authenticate is like Turnitin, but it's a Rolls-Royce version. It's got a lot more to it. It's a lot more sensitive. It's also got a lot more options on it for customising it as well. If you run an Authenticate document, then this is what you get. You get an online version. You also get a PDF, which is sent, which we can send to you. So we can either look at the URL and have a look at the similarity, or we can look at the PDF. It gives you a choice. Normally when we send them back to you, if you've got an issue with it, we'll send you the PDF. And it's very specific. It colour codes the document, just like Turnitin does. And red is usually the first colour, whatever. Red's used for the most common duplication, which is at the top. And it gives you the percentage of the number of words, the percentage of the article, and what the source is. Whether it's a pub, it's nearly always the internet, but sometimes from its own database it will find things. And it will give you the percentage, and you can click on the link and it will take you to where that similarity has occurred. So if you're going to do this, we'll get you, we'll find out, okay? And it also has the other colours, and you can click wherever. So it picks up lots and lots of little bits of similarity, 1%, 2% or whatever, and it picks up the big ones as well. I've made it a bit bigger there so that you can actually see it. And sometimes it's very obvious what the sources are, sometimes it's not quite so obvious what the sources are. So if something's on the internet, it'll be detected. And obviously the company, don't ask me any of the technical aspects about this because I don't understand them. I'm not a computer scientist or an information scientist. I'm just a humble editor and a nursing academic. But they have access to the full text of papers to look for similarity. We don't have that because you've got to pay for that. So they can get right into every book, every paper that's been published. Don't worry, they can do it. You know, they can find it. And that's what the online report looks like. So again, you don't have to scratch your head about where the similarity issues are occurring. It's quite specific. It tells you the words that you've copied. And that's quite a lot of similarity, I have to say. There's hardly an original word in these first few paragraphs. Okay, lots of them there. Somebody's just copied that from somewhere else. They've done well here, but they've not done so well there, and that's just not acceptable. What can happen to you if you're sorry? This is about preventing plagiarism. However, if you get through and we don't do this, I think you've got to be aware, just as the last final words, very depressing words, what can happen to you if you get caught? If we don't stop this and you don't stop yourself from doing it and you get through to the end and we publish a paper that has got similarity in it, then we will then do something about it, and it's a lot more serious than if you get caught going through the process. If we prove it, and we can usually demonstrate it after some investigation, we will retract the paper from the published database. However, please understand that retraction doesn't mean the paper disappears. It stays on the database with a watermark and a statement. So it's not a matter of, oops, I plagiarised, it'll be off the database, nobody will ever know. Everybody will know, okay? So you really have got to avoid doing this. Now, the statement there is a retraction statement based on plagiarism, and the active words there are the retraction's been agreed due to overlap with other previously published material written by third parties. It's very euphemistic, it's legal language, and we never use the word plagiarism, but we do make the point that this wasn't written by the person who wrote it, it was written by other people, and he, in this case, just stole their ideas. You won't be able to read this, but I'll show you the active words in a minute. This is from my own journal before I took over, and this is a case of duplication and retraction based on duplication. Retraction based on duplication, which is a very serious issue, probably less legally serious than plagiarism, but is much more difficult to explain because you've got to go to the other sources and outline them and whatever, and other journals have got to be involved because, you know, things are not duplicated in your own journal, they're sent to other journals and you've got to involve other editors, and it can honestly take up to 2 years, probably more in some cases, to hunt these things to ground. It's an absolute pain in the neck for us to have to deal with it. So the active words there on the retraction are the retraction's been agreed due to duplicate publication of the same article in two journals. I'll just go back again. There are two journals there. After this retraction was published, we discovered there was another paper in another journal, but within the Wiley stable, in the Scandinavian Journal of Health Sciences or Caring Sciences. incredible. And I don't know if you can read it, but the author, Say, S-L, and she appears there, but there are different authors on the paper, tried to get round it. I mean, this is a very deliberate attempt. And Professor Say, that's a Taiwanese-Chinese name, and I don't care about being public about this. She did it, I didn't. Lost her job as a result of this. So this is a serious issue. It's not just something in passing. Lost her job when this was done. So, you know, it's a serious issue. Don't do it. So we have a policy at my journal. I don't know what the policies are at other journals. This is just a very rule of thumb policy, and it's only for us, and it doesn't mean to say this is permission to plagiarise or duplicate, but we have a policy that we actually allow about 15% similarity. I'll let you into a secret, it's very, very difficult to avoid below that. I looked at I can't remember how many papers, I got our editorial assistant to plot out similarity of maybe 100 papers that have been put through the system. And of course, there's a high tail and a high peak and then a low tail. And the tail tailed off at around 14%. So I said, well, let's make it 15. However, if that 15% is one paragraph that's been stolen from somewhere else, you know, we will still not allow that to be published. But if it's scattered throughout, we're okay. 16 to 30%, we give you the opportunity to revise. We're not punitive about this. We're trying to help you to do it. 30 to 50%, we reject the paper. We think that's too much, over a third of the paper. And if it's over that, we of course reject it. And we will ask the author for an explanation. We don't always get it. But what we're trying to show them is that this is really a very serious issue. We can't force them to give us an explanation. But once that's been on the database, if they try and publish it somewhere else, it's going to be picked up at some point by someone else. So I've already mentioned COPE, the Committee on Publication Ethics. I would really urge you, for all sorts of reasons, not just to do with similarity, to take a look at the COPE webpage. It's well worth it. It's very interesting. They've got a really interesting webpage. You can sign up for email alerts for COPE conferences, and also the COPE Digest, which comes out every month, and that follows the cases that they do. They're always done anonymously in COPE, but they're very interesting, and you wouldn't believe the things that people get up to try and get their papers published. Some people go to far more effort through plagiarism and duplication than they would have if they just worked hard to get a good paper published. Some people seem to specialise in it. Similar to COPE, but completely unrelated to COPE, is Retraction Watch. It's well worth Googling Retraction Watch, and you can sign up to their email alerts. Retraction Watch is not anonymous. It names and it shames. And you will get alerts every day, often 3 or 4 alerts from Retraction Watch about papers that have been retracted, nearly always on the basis of fabrication or plagiarism. So it's hundreds of papers in a week, thousands in a month, and God knows how many in a year. You know, there's a lot of it going on. We've really got to take efforts to stop it. Well, this is just shamelessly plugging a book that I've helped to edit, along with Karen Holland, who's an editor, an Elsevier editor, and it covers all aspects of publication, including ethical aspects. That's my email address at the University of Hull. You're welcome to ask me questions now, but you may have questions that you're either too shy or might come up afterwards, and then you can email me and ask me them. You can follow me on Twitter if you're exceedingly bored. I know a lot of people here do, which is fun. And ORCID number, which is something that all of you who are involved in research and publication should have. It's a unique identifier of your work in the public domain. And journals like mine and other journals are increasingly asking you to submit your ORCID number when you submit a paper. So if you get an ORCID number, it's a way of knowing that your work is yours and not somebody else's. So I'd strongly urge you to sign up to ORCID as well. Okay, I saw a hand going up. You've got a question?